Hello and welcome into another episode of Podcast 63. It is season 5, episode 21, and this is going to be probably the last episode before the tournament. Well, definitely before the tournament, and might be the last episode of the season. We are going to be talking about the St. Joe's Senior Night game. And then we will get into the breakdown of the tournament. We'll kind of give like our favorites, maybe a dark horse, maybe a team that we think could bow out early that is higher up in the seedings. So that is the plan for this week. Lou, I don't know if I definitely have not. Have you been able to recover from the senior night loss yet?
Yeah, no. Again, the way it started, I thought Rhode Island was just going to really be more than we could handle. And then, of course, just rip my heart out again. Back-to-back home games like that. But again, hey, saw some things that was really great to see, especially from a senior who, again, last time we'll see him in the jersey. So really cool to see that. But yeah, tough one ultimately at the end there. Absolutely just pulled on the heartstrings.
Yeah, to make it doubly bad, both Loyola teams lost on a one-possession game with a out-of-bounds play to either tie it or win it. So it was a pretty rough day to be a Rambler fan all around. So we will jump into that here in a minute. But thank you all for listening. And don't forget, always remember, go Blurs. And we are back. Let's start at the beginning. Let's go over the senior night game. Coming into this game, it was a battle for the bottom. Loyola and Rhode Island were in last place and second to last place. Loyola had a chance if they were going to win this game and then win at LaSalle that they could find themselves out of the bottom. I think there was even a chance they could finish 13th still with like tiebreakers over UMass.
Came to more like after 14, it came to like a few other teams need to lose and such, and then maybe the head to head with UMass for sure. But yeah, ultimately to get us out of 15, we had to win the next two on our own merit. Sure.
Yeah, and unfortunately that didn't happen. I think we've come to understand that the differences in the A-10, especially with athleticism and shot making, are just really different. In the Valley, when we would see teams toward the bottom of the standings, it was more of like, oh well, we're going to win, right? Or like, we're not going to be outmatched, even if it was one of our seasons where we weren't all that great. Like we play a bottom two, bottom three team. Like, yeah, we're still going to be able to match up. And then it's just a matter of like game plan. It's a matter of execution. And as long as we can do those things, we'll win. And that is just not the case in the A-10. Like you have to, especially us as undersized and I think underskilled as well, we have to bring it every single time on the court if we expect to win. And if we don't, it's just that simple. Like, we're not going to win anywhere. We're not going to win at home on senior night against the second to last team in the conference. And I don't really even think we played particularly terrible. There's a couple categories we look at. Like, in terms of turnovers, we only had 7. You look at free throws, we shot 73%. From the field, we shot almost 50%. So those are all, like, decent numbers. But, you know, of course, you dive deeper and you can find some stuff that really did go wrong. But for me, it was just a matter, our defense wasn't there, especially our guard defense. Rhode Island just has, again, 3 guards who can just go out and get a bucket. And that's something that we are learning is not what we have. So, yeah, Lou, I don't know. What stood out to you? Like, where did this go wrong? And how did we find ourselves on the wrong side of a game again?
Yeah, it was, very irkly similar to the Fordham game at home. Another 2-point loss. Another one where it was like, what was that other box that didn't get checked, right? We talked about maybe three. We've talked about many different categories, and ultimately this team has, kind of, in my opinion, this Loyola team has shed different games, different issues. But really offensively was really a pretty efficient night. So, like, I tip my cap, even like you mentioned the free throws. Like, that's a crazy thing to be like, oh, we're kind of consistently around that 70-plus range. Yeah, turnovers were 7. And crazy enough, we had 18 assists. I nearly, like jumped out of my seat when I saw that. And I was like, what a transition. Like, Rhode Island, by the way, had more turnovers than us. They had 8. But still, hey, that's a win right there when you're forcing the team. A crazy thing that I noticed, there was not a single offensive foul by us, I'm pretty sure. Because all 7 of our turnovers were 7 steals. Rhode Island had 7 steals. We had 7 turnovers. That's how that matches up. There's really no other way that matches up. So that kind of threw me off, that stat. But again, ultimately, if you're looking at it and trying to figure out how we like matched up very similarly, I think it comes down to just shots. And yeah, Rhode Island had only 4 more shots than us, I think. Or no, I think they had 5 more shots. Yeah, so 5 more shots.
5,
in
yeah.
total. But they had 12 offensive rebounds. That's really the key of it there. I think Drew mentioned in his post game, yeah, the 3-pointer, just the shots. We were letting guards just take shots. Pretty open. And to Buck, your point, yeah, it was pretty evident that, like, we were kind of leaning off them. I think somebody even tweeted out, and I apologize, I can't give him a shout-out, but, yeah, Rhode Island might not be efficient from 3. We can't really just, like, leave the person wide open. I think we learned that with Greer at St. Joe's, right? I think he had below 30%, and he still put it to us, right? So, yeah, I think ultimately that kind of idea of rebounds ultimately really just got us in the second half. I think that's what when you give them more possessions or more of opportunity to shoot, that's just what's going to happen as well again. And then, I don't know, Buck, I kind of didn't make a note of it. Did we miss, do you think, a lot of one-on-ones? I thought it was just like I know Phil, for example, had just missed 2, but everyone else was pretty, I don't know if we had many one-on-one opportunities. Maybe I think Tom had one, or I think he had the and one after the amazing dunk, but I love how I slid that in. But yeah, it was it was such like a game, like you said, that like it's like where were we doing something wrong? And obviously, not only do you have to play defense on every guard an A-10 team has, you also have to execute and do sometimes the fundamental things that you think you can do. Like some other teams might just try to do it better, and in this case, really, a theme for this year, in my opinion, besides defense on guards, has to be the box out rebounding. Like, it is crazy how we've now seen at least the last 4 home games. Like, it is like after the second try, we get the rebound. And that's great. We got the rebound. But then it's like it just feels like we're struggling to go up and grab that board defensive rebound. And it just, like, again, that gives the team another possession. That also windles the clock down potentially, right? Like, maybe they get another 20 seconds. You don't know. Like, that again, as it came down to at the end of this game, it came down to, like, time of possession, right? We didn't have enough time in our final possession, caused us to rush it, caused a weird play, but those little things can really fundamentally change the whole thing. And when you give a team another more possessions, and even again, right, even if it's they didn't take every shot with every possession they got back, it's still just like the idea of them taking up the clock more than us, right? And those are things just to learn. Buck, I think the biggest thing for me is just like the realization of how big guard play is. I really came in thinking like Holmes was like the pinnacle of like what you need. And it's like, wow, like guard play and having it like a group of guards really can, like that, a trio is a dream to have because it really fundamentally can fix so many issues personally.
Yeah, it really will change the way that I think about both recruiting and like transfer portal. Is like, unless we have like 3 guys that played really well, like 3 guards that played really well and someone waiting in the wing, like we don't have enough guards. Like it's just, that's I think kind of the kind of the lesson that we've learned. I mean, yeah, it's been a bummer that we haven't been able to see Jaden Dawson play, but you know, I don't think he was going to be that one of those guys this year. Like, I think he could have been a fun piece to watch, and kind of like we're doing with Jalen, is like seeing flashes, but, you know, that wasn't going to be him this year. But yeah, I just, it's incredible. I think the guard play, and I would probably venture to guess that like a lot of the A-10 fans that have been here for a while probably take it for granted because they see it so much and they see it so often. And, you know, it is a down year for the A-10, but I mean, without a doubt, we can say that the guard play in the A-10 is like leagues above the Valley. There's some smart guards in the Valley. There's some, you know, crafty and like veteran guards, but it's not like this. It's been a hard lesson to learn, I think, in year one. There's been a lot of hard lessons to learn in year one for Loyola in the A-10. But yeah, we can kind of transition to some good stuff, because like you mentioned too, there was some good stuff. Just like in general, one of the differences was lineups again. I mean, I think, you know, we've just really seen Drew try everything, and I think this probably goes to the lengths of everything now, seeing Sheldon get 25 minutes, as well as like Golden and Huddy playing only a combined 11 minutes, where Golden only played 8 total, and giving Tom 22 minutes is kind of reminiscent of like toward the beginning of the season. And, you know, and in this one, like Ben really didn't play all that much either, only played 18 minutes. He was the one guy that was kind of in foul trouble, which is a shame, because he made his first three like right in the first, I don't know, 5 minutes or whatever it was. I was really hoping maybe he'd be able to hit a couple more throughout the game. But yeah, like for me, the lineup was different. I'm happy to see Sheldon out there. I'm sure we'll kind of get to him and like specifically here in a little bit. Also, I thought Jalen had a really nice like middle of the second half when I think he had like 3 straight buckets or something at some point, or at least like 3 out of 4. And really like kind of he was part of that group that was out there and got us back into the game. So I liked what I saw out of Jalen, just him attacking. You know, pretty good day for Braden. Nothing too crazy. 15 points, 5 assists, 3 steals. Played 39 minutes, because of course he did. Mm-hmm. But then once you get past that, I mean, Marquise played okay. You know, I 10 points and an assist, only 17 minutes. I thought he played okay, but you don't come down the stretch. Like, I mean, Jalen was playing a little bit more. Sheldon was in there instead of him. So it just, you know, I just think, and we've talked a little bit about Marquise, and I think going into the offseason, there's going to be some hard conversations to be had about Marquise around the team and just kind of as fans as well. But yeah, I don't know if any of those guys stick out to you that you maybe want to take off on or start off on.
The biggest one for me happens to be actually Mario Wright, Jamel Wilson, senior night, last home game, I expect, of this season, and of his career, for the school he's playing for. So again, bittersweet for sure. Like, that's probably also his parents are there. I assume his parents were there for the Lehigh one. I don't know, but it's mm-hmm. again, his parents, I'm assuming, are still local, since he's from the Chicago area, right? So that was really cool to see. But yeah, and then also like see him play big moments in this game. Like, we had big moments. A great he didn't steal the ball, now I think about it. Sorry, I was about to say great steal. Great block by Phil, and then transition to pushing it up to Wilson, who I think that the defender just bit too much, in my opinion. I don't think Merrill kind of tried moved, to steal it. Merrill was looking to like make a way to the basket, so absolutely had his head up, which was great, and then put a nice little dunk in to finish it, right? So that was great to see. Speaking of dunks, let's just say it, like Tom Welch put a person potentially in a body bag, potentially like need to like check. You can also check it on SportsCenter's top plays. It was quite a sight to see. A really great thing that it was all over social media. Tom had a pretty aggressive night. I think when I say aggressive, yeah, the dunk is pretty obviously aggressive, right? But again, for someone coming off the bench, I think 7 points is pretty great. Little foul trouble there. Again, would love a little bit more rebound, especially from the big guy himself, right? So minutes off the bench are great there. Marquise, right? Confused, right? Put up 10 points. It's so weird. Again, I don't think he's played fully healthy. I don't know. Again, off the bench, 10 points is a great thing to have, right? When you can have guys come off the bench and produce, that's great for sure. I think Jalen Quinn, I love him. I think he's going to learn. He had a really, really silly foul. Like, when I say silly, it's not even funny. It's just like, oh, wow. For those who don't recall or saw last night, he ran into, I guess you could say, the shooter's, what is it called, shooting landing zone, right, I guess you could say. And the guy missed the three, but got three free throws given right back to him. And it was a little tough to see personally because it was just like, it's the small things, and it's, I know he's a freshman, but I really like his gameplay, and I really think he should be getting the minutes. And it's just like stuff like that. I know Drew's like, oh, he's going to have to learn from that. And it's like, don't want it to be, I got to look over at the sideline every time there's a whistle or anything, just to be worried about, like, is it me who's coming out? Like, I can't have that too much, especially at this part of the season, right? We have one regular season game left. So it's like, and we already are slated for 15 seed. So the little things there are interesting, but ultimately, again, Phil and Braden, I think they are realizing they need to play at a high level. And I think finding a way for them both to be consistent is going to be key next season. Like, Braden, again, 15 points. I forgot he even fouled out. Did he foul out? Wait, why do I not?
No, he only had one foul. No.
Oh, he drew one foul.
He had five assists.
This is what's... He drew five fouls. These five fouls are always going to kill.
There you go.
But, like, again, he had five assists. So, like, that's great. But, like, then those five assists really didn't, I guess, produce for Phil. So it's like those two guys, in my opinion, are ultimately going to have to be figuring out something where you guys are pretty much the best players we have right now from, like, a let's come back from last season, and you need to be consistently the best players. So, yeah, I think that's a learning lesson we're going to have to – they're going to have to figure out. We're going to figure out as a program just like what gels in the A-10. And personally, I think the A-10 is like you need consistency or have a group of guys that can perform consistently, right? And, again, asking two freshmen and Jalen and Ben to do that every game and every day, every night out there is really tough, I think. But I think they'll easily learn – and be given those opportunities to try that out for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of the last thing I have here, I did want to talk about Sheldon.
Absolutely.
You know, we've the last couple podcasts have probably talked more about Sheldon combined than the whole year, and that's even taking into account his first game. But that's because he's seen the floor more. 16 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 blocks as well. Hit 3 of his 8 three-pointers. So, you know, not a terrible number, especially when you're shooting that many. It's good that he knocked down 3 of them. Yeah, I mean, I think he just provides something very different for this team, and that shot-making ability. And I think his defense has improved enough to see the court. Now, I don't know if it was worth waiting, you know, what, 20 plus games to see him, like if he really needed to work on his defense for two-thirds of the season, but I'm glad he's seeing the court now, and just at least getting some run, and just so that we can, like, coaching staff, so the fans, and so that he can see what it looks like with him on the court, and going with Braden and running with Phil and all that kind of stuff, and just kind of getting film on himself. And I hope he seems just like a super solid teammate too. Everything that we can see just seems like he's always there. He's the first up off the bench when his teammates do something well, and, you know, he's helping people up off the court. Like, it just seems like he's a great teammate. And it from him not playing all year, and then coming out here and really taking advantage of the opportunity he's been given, I want him back next year. I really do. I think that his athleticism is incredible, as was on display tonight or the other night. And three block shots for someone who's 6'4" is nothing to scoff at. And I just think, like I said, he brings something very different to the table than what we have. And sometimes being different can lead to some good things. So I liked what I saw out of him. I hope that he continues to get more run in whatever games we have left, and I hope he is thinking about coming back next year. What do you have to say about our guy Sheldon Edwards?
Yeah, I think ultimately it's going to come down to, like, again, did he get enough minutes this year to really make like notice for Drew and staff? I don't know. It's ultimately also kind of weird to think about it, but it was all up to Drew and staff to have him play or not play. So I think the biggest question for me in returns to, if we're talking about just next season, besides this game, it's going to be really potentially what can we get, what's out there, and is there a difference? Again, maybe Sheldon off the bench. Like I've mentioned now two guys off the bench. Sheldon putting up 16 points off the bench isn't too shabby as well, right? Clearly minutes were taken away from Bryce, which is like fine. Just weird to see Bryce only play 8 minutes on senior night. You could say minutes were taken away definitely from Ben, but again, I'd rather have a collective than one guy. I think we're learning that, especially like we said in the A-10. So finding those ways to produce as a team, right? Less about one person really doing it themselves, but finding ways to produce as a team. If Sheldon can add to that, then I think that's the case. I didn't notice any great improvements with the defense, personally. I'm not saying he isn't going to improve when he plays more, obviously, right? But it'd be interesting to see what we think about for next year for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm getting at for his defense is just impact plays, right? Three blocks and a steal.
Absolutely.
Is like
in block play,
possession changing. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm not saying. Like, yeah, no, he's no lockdown defender for sure. Like he's still sometimes guys get by him, but I think
there have been plenty of guys this year,
could,
right? Like when we played, what was it, Ben up against Bishop, right?
Yeah,
like that's just the way it works sometimes. Kind of crazy to think, but that's just what it was this year.
This was his most minutes since opening day. He had played 27 minutes against Fairleigh Dickinson and then hadn't played over 18. He played 18 against UIC and then 15 and 16 and then a couple of 10. But, yeah, this is the second most minutes he's played. Most minutes in a regulation game, I guess you could say.
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm all aboard Sheldon coming back. And like you said, yeah, off the bench. I think that's what we thought his role would be this year. We thought he'd be sixth guy or seventh.
Sixth guy, potentially even starting, right? Creeping in that starting lineup. Again, I think this season has really shown that we need a player. Like, I think next year, again, if we're going to talk about Ben and Jalen have shown that they can play and play at minutes now if they get better.
Mm-hmm.
But when looking at recruiting now, I think that's going to really change my perspective of like what do we need from a recruit. And sometimes if you're going to start, we need you to be a guy who's proven starter, and if you're going to come off the bench, someone who's potentially got a way to like score, I think, elusively.
So
again, excited to talk about that, though we got hopefully a little bit more basketball to go. But again, crazy to think our last home game of the season most likely ended in such a tough loss. Again, Another loss at home by two. But again, one last thing for me at the home game, huge shout out to the student section this year. If you hadn't been present to any home games, please get to some next year. I think the students will show even more next year, because I think the team will start winning more next year than they did this year. And the fact that the students showed up this year with the way things turned out is really impressive. So really excited about that and really happy. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before we kind of change gears here and talk about the tournament, I do have to take a moment here and talk about mini jerseys. If you, I might be a little too late now if you're trying to order something to bring with you to the Atlantic 10 tournament, but if you want something delivered when you get home, make sure to go look at minijerseys.com. We will be sure to be rocking some of our gear this weekend, next weekend, I suppose, in Brooklyn. I love my Blair's hoodie. I think probably this summer I got to get myself an actual jersey. Maybe once Miles Rubin gets in the NIL, process, so we can get a Miles Rubin jersey. But absolutely. Yeah. So if you haven't checked him out, make sure to go to minijerseys.com. That's minijerseys with a Z. Now back to the pod. For the tournament, let's start off by saying we're going to be the 15 seed. We do know our spot.
We do.
Obviously not where we thought we'd be. It's funny we talk about sometimes, like earlier in the year, we were very wrong. I mean, there's no going back, right? There's no going back and changing anything. But me and Lou would joke at the beginning of the year, like people would be asking like if we're going to the tournament or like, and we had fully planned to go to the tournament all along. And so like buddies, family, whatever would ask us like, oh, what day are they playing? Like, when do they start? And it's like, well, you know, technically the tournament starts Tuesday, but like, oh yeah, we'll be fine. There's no way we're going to play on Tuesday. If we play on Tuesday, like something's gone horribly wrong. And lo and behold, it's probably our fault. Cause we said that so much, or at least I did. I said that so much.
It's funny because, I was looking back and we're not the only one. Some pretty big analysts said it. And
for sure. Oh yeah.
But ultimately though, you're right though in saying like it's no one expected us to be here today, be on Tuesday.
No.
Like no. And things
went wrong. One expected us to average 25 turnovers for about 20 games of the year.
And to maybe only scrap the season with 10 wins, right? Maybe, right? So yeah, a lot of things didn't go the right way. A lot of things were shockers for sure. But I think ultimately this is like when you move up that next step, right? It's a learning process, right? There was an article talking about, were we ready? And honestly, would I have preferred last year's roster moved up with us first? Yes, who wouldn't? All those guys, seniors returning, but we have to deal with the roster we had at hand. And it was just a lot of new guys who I think also, some guys were coming to a new level of competition, right? Themselves, right?
Yeah.
Phil from D2 just to D1 alone. It's not just from NBC to A10. Other guys going from NBC to A10. So a lot of different factors.
In high school.
High school
to college.
Exactly. So, yeah. Ultimately, not where we wanted to be, but again, we still can find a way, I think, to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, here's kind of the quick and dirty on teams going into the tournament. So VCU will be the one seed. They have already locked that down. They've already won the conference. I think the thing to know about VCU is they want to play the game in the 50s, right? Like, they don't want to score a bunch of points. VCU, for the most part, is exactly who we thought they'd be before the season. And I just wish a lot of the other 8-10 teams were exactly who we thought they'd be before the start of the season. Two of those teams who we thought they'd be are Dayton and SLU. Dayton was a preseason top 25 team, and now they're not. They're going to be in second place. They've already locked down their spot. Same with SLU. SLU was challenging for like a top 25 spot before the season as well. Some analysts had them up there. Some of their senior leaders, besides Yuri Collins, have really disappointed as far as like shooting goes. And then to round out the top four will probably most likely be Fordham, who again we were very wrong on Fordham. They most likely will be in the top four, and those are kind of, you know, the favorites, right? As you kind of go down the list, I particularly think Duquesne is pretty good. They can get hot in an instant. I think we've seen St. Bonaventure win a lot of games. I wouldn't be surprised if they win a couple. And then if you're really looking for, like, I don't know, a dark horse or something, I particularly like Richmond. I think Tyler Burton is a legitimate NBA player. And they have a couple other guys that round out their rotation that are super solid. If you're playing like a late sort of, you know, like if they make it to a close game and late in the second half, like I wouldn't be surprised if they knock off maybe like a younger team or one that hasn't been playing together for as long as they have. So that's kind of my quick summary. I don't know if you have any other thoughts about any other teams before we kind of talk about who we like and who we think could surprise some people. But
yeah, I think
if you have any other just general thoughts.
Yeah, really for me, the biggest one is if Dayton clicks on all cylinders, I think they could be unstoppable. They need to, though. Mm-hmm. Again, they were dealing with injuries throughout the year, so things might be different and tough. But like, if you have Holmes and Kamara and just that collective group, if they all do, again, as a group, do things well, right, they could be unstoppable. I think VCU could maybe, I don't know, I think they've been doing really well. They could choke at the pressure, who knows. I'm not, like, again, in love with them as much as maybe, like, again, when I look at, like, VCU, Ace Baldwin, absolutely, but, like, I like Yuri Collins just because of his goal of facilitating. But for me, actually, I think a dark horse absolutely might be Davidson. I really do think you get Foster and Sam Meninga caught. I think that could change, like, so much. I do like your Richmond pick. I didn't want to, like, pick also Richmond just for, like, the same. So if I had another one, I really do think Davidson. I think Foster and Meninga are at least top 10 in points per game. So, again, like, you get an offense going, I think that really could be dangerous for sure. So yeah, I'm going to go with Davidson as kind of my like dark horse kind of pick for sure. But yeah, I think big things really for me to watch out for are like guys like James Bishop, right? Quisenberry on Fordham. Like some of these teams have had guys really step up. And I think that's like what we've talked about, right? Like Quisenberry for Fordham being in the top four, I think he obviously is a key factor to that, right? Bishop for GW, I think being a key factor for sure. So a lot of factors that go into it. And I think really the ultimate thing is who stands on top. And right now there's not too much of a gap between the first two, in my opinion, and maybe like 5 through 7. It's a tough cut there. Again, there's 15 teams in this league now, in this conference. And there are just so many guys to look out for. But I think, when it comes down to the top teams, I think that there could be a battle for sure, especially with its double bye, right? This is their first time with double bye, I believe. Or no?
No, they had the pillow fight last year, but the pillow fight was just the bottom four last
year. Right. Yep. Yeah. So yeah. And then again, maybe do the other thing just to look for extended buck. Do we think the day off will help?
Yeah, that's with the Friday day off.
Yeah. That's
going to
be interesting.
Yeah, sure. I was kind of going to go into, like, the structure a little bit just for people. Yeah, I mean, especially for our Loyola fans who might not know. We were talking about the pillow fight. So that is the coined term. I think it is actually coined by A10 Talk. And that is the bottom teams that play on the first day. So similar to, like, I think the Valley had it too, like those opening round games. It's just the name for the first round. This year, there's six teams, so teams 10 through 15 will play in the opening round in the pillow fight, and that's where we'll be matched up with whoever finishes 10th. So if you're looking at, like, advantages, like those teams that get the double bye have a huge advantage, right? They don't have to play until Thursday, and then they get a day off, and then they can play Friday or Saturday, rather. If they win. So it is a huge advantage for those teams rather than having to play like three games straight through. So, I mean, if you're kind of looking at it that way, I do think the teams that finish in the top four have a significant advantage over all the rest of the teams. Mm-hmm. That's why for me, I think like, I guess we'll see it in play this year with the day off on Friday, which is the first time they're doing that. But for me, I think those top four teams really do have an advantage, and that's why, in particular, I personally am taking VCU. I know it's kind of a boring pick, like they're the top team in the conference. But
you're just chalking. It's okay.
I am. I think there's going to be madness elsewhere. I will tell you. We will get into that. But I think VCU's defense is too good. I think Ace Baldwin is super solid at this moment. I think he's my pick for player of the year, which we'll probably go over in like a postseason podcast, all the players, because we have too much to talk about on this one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Ace is great. I think Jaden Nunn could be a guy that could pop off for 25 points. If they need that, they might not even need that. And I think Deloach is a solid big as well. I think he matches up pretty decently with like Dernholms or Kamara. I think he's a pretty decent defensive matchup for those guys if they meet up. So yeah, my pick is VCU to win it all. I don't know who you sounded like you might be riding with Dayton a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm gonna have to go with Dayton. I want to put my kind of again the Fordham SLU game. Honestly, for me, made me question SLU. I'll be honest. So if people are wondering why not like SLU or something, and then again Fordham just. If we're talking top four teams, right? But yeah, Dayton, I don't know. The game at home, being able to watch Dayton as a collective, I was like, oh, it's not just guards can look to score. It's not just Holmes, right? And again, even in the game against us, Holmes didn't score much, but they had another player be able to drop 20 plus on us, right? So again, just from personal scarring, maybe against Loyola. I think, again, if Dayton clicks, I think they could. And honestly, I do think that the top four teams are going to take advantage of potentially just, like, the way the games are being played out. Like, they are going to have an extra day off while teams are kind of just like, wait, we've played already maybe two, right? It's going to be interesting for sure. But, yeah, I think I'll have to go with Dayton there.
Yeah, I see that too. I think the championship game is going to be VCU and Dayton. And here's where I think the craziness starts to get in here. So, yeah, my dark horse is going to be Duquesne. I want to pick a team that for sure is not going to fall into that double bye slot. I think the double bye slot is just brutal. Like, I you could run this tournament, I think, 50 times, and I don't think you'd get a winner from the double bye. That's my bold statement. I just think it's really, really brutal for those teams to have to play five games in 6 days. It would take some weird circumstances. And the Dukes aren't going to fall below that double bye slot. They have some really great guards. I mean, that goes without saying, I guess, in the A-10. But that can get hot really quick. I actually think former Missouri Valley Conference friend Trey Williams, their big, is an effective defender as well. I read something, I didn't even know this, but he's only like 6'8", 6'7". Like, he's not super tall, but he's got over a 7-foot wingspan, and that's like really necessary when you're defending those Kamara and Holmes and stuff, and Deloach too from VCU. So I think the Dukes make a run. I think they could potentially knock a team out and make it to that finals. And for me, I think both Fordham and SLU are going to lose their first game. Like, no matter where they're at, I don't think either of them are locked into the double bye. SLU's but locked. No matter into where the they bye. Play,
no matter
what. Are they okay?
They're either going to be three or four, but Fordham isn't. Fordham can be
okay.
I think I saw Fordham could go as far back as five if things. I don't know what needs to happen. But I know SLU is definitely locked in top four. Yeah,
I think Fordham and SLU lose their first games. I think Mason, I think George Washington, I think those two teams are super solid if they match up with those.
So pretty much every team past four is a dark horse, is that what you're saying?
No. I think the Dukes are super good. I think Mason and Washington are fine. Oduro on Mason is great. Bishop can put up 40 as he did on us. And I think the Bonnies are solid too. I just think that those teams are too, like, there's not a big gap when it comes to like after the second team. So for me, Fordham and SLU, I think, are going to lose their first game in the weekend. no matter when that happens.
I think for me, when I go back to my Davidson kind of dark horse, it's really just also going to depend on the seeding. Right.
Yeah.
I think if Davidson gets it, as long as Davidson moves away from VCU as their second game, because I think Davidson right now is hovering around like the 8 seed. I think there's a chance they can get. No, I think 8 is the highest they can go. So that's my only concern, is that 8-9 is their second game as VCU. But again, that's the whole point of what I'm talking about with hot offense. So if they want to go off, that'd be great. I think Duquesne right now, depending on how they finish the season, is in such a position to make a splash. And it would be really interesting if they get that 4 over Fordham. Because then I think Fordham could struggle. And again, Fordham only would need to play 1, but I think Fordham would potentially struggle and if they don't get that double bye. So, yeah, I would be very intrigued if I had to throw a name out there. Just when looking at, like, where teams are being ranked, pushed this far back, like, I see potentially Richmond could be 12 if things happen. So if they were to get 12, I think Richmond could maybe make a run up until after. Again, this would be then them playing 2 games. So, yeah, it's up there. Again, we're the only team really technically locked in, though I think UMass and Rhode Island are going to be – one of them is going to be 14, one of them is going to be 13. There's really no difference there. So the bottom end is going to be pretty much set. It's going to be that, like, next third with LaSalle and St. Joe's and even Bonnie's, and people are going to have to figure out. But, yeah, and then, again, I love your point, though. Don't forget about GW and Jordan Mason pretty much sitting in the middle of the pack, yeah. Right, at, like, 6-7. They could easily surprise. I think Jordan Mason can make a 5, it looks like. I think GW is really favored for that 7 seed. That could be a splash. And as well as – that would be really interesting to see, like, GW and Jordan Mason in, what, the semifinal. Dayton maybe in SLU. That would be interesting. But, yeah, again, now with 15 teams, and even they had 14 last year, just a lot of moving parts in the A-10 tournament. I think it's also – it might be chaos to some. I think it's like beauty in the chaos, or just beauty in the madness. It's a little fun, and I know Buck and I are very excited to be there in presence of all these games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also think whatever the opposite of, like, kiss of death is, I guess maybe blessing. I think I just bless Fordham, because I've also, you know, we called them phonies and fakes in the beginning of the year. Now I said they're going to lose their first round. So that, I think that really just means, like, Fordham is going to go win the whole thing.
Yeah,
so I think I've done it.
I have family members, so I just can't have my family rubbing it in my face. But no, we did call them out. If they want to clap back again, we've done that in the past, aka 365 days ago.
Oh yeah.
After the NBC tournament, so no problem if people want to call us out. But yeah, no, a lot of moving parts. Excited again, though. We still have this, our last regular season game. It is away. Buck, you are going to it. I'm happy we get a presence there. Let me know what you think of LaSalle. I'm very intrigued what their arena is. And then after Saturday, we will be playing Tuesday. There's no ands, ifs, or buts. It's Tuesday at 2 o'clock. Yeah.
I think I saw, too, that the team is going to be just traveling right from Philadelphia to Brooklyn. I think I saw Scott, the radio guy, was trying to figure out his travel plans, because originally it looked like they were gonna fly tomorrow to Philly.
With the huge storm
they're gonna fly out to Philly tonight. I bet they're in the air now, and then they're gonna take the train from Philly to Brooklyn. I guess I don't know if the team will, but at least Scott was.
I think that'd be interesting, maybe a bus just because of all the gear. I know the Knicks, just as an avid Knicks fan, they sometimes take the little Amtrak train down to Philly. But that's exciting. That's cool. For sure. I'm very intrigued now to think if the team's on the way to Philly, and then of course on to Brooklyn.
Yeah. So they'll be there, and like you said, I'll be in Philly. I'll be cheering on our Ramblers against LaSalle. I'll try to have a voice of 10 to make up for it. And yeah, I'll report back on I think it's Tom Gola Arena. I think that's what it's called.
Tom Gola, there's a great Twitter account that follows us. or that part of
yes.
that.
I'll save my, I have some thoughts just from the pictures, but I will hold them back because I feel like as a last place team, we don't really get to be cocky and we don't really get to be insulting.
Nope.
So I will hold back my diss until I've been there.
There you go.
And then that's just like, and then at that point, that's just research, right? Like if I've been there and talk crap about it, then that's just research.
There you, I guess so.
Any last thoughts, closing, I don't know, epiphanies that you've had?
I don't know. Maybe don't get hurt on Saturday. Anyone on the team, play hard.
Yeah,
but,
don't get hurt.
Don't get hurt in general, but, we got the tournament then on Tuesday and I'm hoping for a good 5 straight games. So, that's what I'm hoping for.
that would be the dream.
I think I might cry. I'm very superstitious, and Buck doesn't believe it. If 5 straight games happen starting Tuesday, I will name one of my children's names will include the word blur or something.
The player of the – or no, it's the person who wins the player of the tournament. You got to name your child after –
I don't
whoever.
Know about after. Definitely in the name. I don't know.
Well, you don't want like little baby Sheldon – or you really, you know, Bryce? You're not thinking baby Bryce?
Yeah, you never know. You never know. We got some time. But, yeah, I'll say that out there right now.
Yeah.
Ending thoughts, that's what I'm going
to I've thought how funny it would be because, like, so we're both reporting on the tournament. And, you know, we're focusing, obviously, on the Loyalist stuff. But we'll definitely catch some other games, too, and try to report on those as well. I have already thought about how difficult it's going to be to bite my tongue. It has been, but we haven't actually like officially covered a men's game as media. So it's going to be extremely hard to bite my tongue, our tongues, as media just for a game. I can't even imagine the like willpower we would have if Loyola makes even like the semis, right? Of like, not screaming at the refs as we're sitting at the table at Barclays Center. Like I don't even really want to imagine it right now.
Don't even think you could keep yourself together for the women's game sitting courtside.
I you know, it's just funny that you mentioned this. So as our listeners probably know, I've been covering the women here in Wilmington. Actually, this podcast is coming live from Wilmington. And, the women's game was super close and I've been doing a pretty good job. Not 100%. I'm not perfect, but pretty good job of like not yelling or not, you know, even speaking up to the refs. And this game in particular was super challenging because it was close and they came back from being down 18 and like, it was a huge deal. So what I allowed myself was when Loyola scored was that I would clap for them because I feel like that's appropriate, right?
That's
like you're just clapping for athletes.
You're
yeah, clap, yeah, a good solid.
You're clapping for buckets. That's what you're doing. Clapping for buckets.
Right, right. I'm not booing for like their buckets. I'm not clapping when they miss. It's just clapping like a nice solid, you know, louder than a golf clap, but not an obnoxious.
In your face. There
like,
you go.
Right. So anyway, that's stories from Wilmington, and there'll be more stories from Wilmington, I'm sure, in a week or so. I think that's gonna do it here from Buck and Lewitt Podcast 63. We'll definitely have more episodes for you. It might not be until after the season ends. We'll have to wait and see what the results hold for us, but there will definitely be episodes after the season to wrap up the year, talk about the tournament, and talk about where we go from here. So we appreciate everyone that listens and enjoys our content. So thank you all for listening, and don't forget, always remember, go Blurs.